Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2017, Episode 18. Young, co-founder of AC/DC, it's only fitting we start with Hell's Bells on our podcast this week. This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. I'm Travis Justice. Nebraska is not going to a bowl game. Mike Riley will more than likely be fired after the Huskers game with Iowa on Friday or Saturday morning. Dr. Rob, this will be more like a funeral. Will this be more like a funeral this week? Or will we have a team at Nebraska that's going to play for its coaches and prepares for his last game?
You know, that's a good question. You know, we got a question on Twitter about Lamar Jackson's post-game interview where he talked about stability and they feel like they've got the pieces in place to have success, including on the coaching staff. And it's a sense of stability. It's that continuity is where success comes from.
It's gonna.
I don't know. The
week.
Numbers just aren't there. And I mean, I guess I understand when you talk about that continuity and having those guys in place and keeping them.
Well, I'm going to bring that up a little bit later in this podcast.
I just don't see it. Which I guess to answer the Twitter questions about it. And I think it was EJ on Twitter who was asking this, that when you look at it that way, I mean, I guess I would go back to when Nebraska fired Craig Bohl as defensive coordinator and brought in Bo Pelini. And one year there was a marked change in how well the defense played. Now, they still got scorched by Bill Snyder in Kansas State, which led to the Bo Pelini getting in Bill Snyder's face after the game.
And led to Frank Solich getting fired.
Yeah, there's a lot of other things that led to Frank Solich getting fired. I don't know if that game had anything to do with it.
No, but when Nebraska fans filed out of the stadium and they got blown out at home, I think that was the last straw.
Okay, keep in mind that was ultimately what ended up being a 10-win season.
Yes, that's true. And that's what drove a lot of people. That's what people don't forget. What people don't know and won't know because it was never discussed is that Tom Osborne was never going to put his name on the athletic facility. He promised Steve Peterson that he would do it for Frank Solich. And when Tom Osborne showed up at the announcement and Frank Solich wasn't there, he knew that Steve Peterson had duped him and lied to him and that Frank was going to get fired at the end of the season.
Which I think is probably one of the things that kind of started this whole downward spiral. But, I mean, it's Harvey Perlman, it's Steve Peterson. There was multiple players there. Anyway, my point is that you go back and you look at change. You look at what you saw a change in the defense from Craig Bohl
in
02 to Pelini in 03. I'm not saying it was perfect, but it was better. Across the board, it was better. They still got smoked in a couple of games, but it was better. And Pelini was only there for 1 year. And, yeah, I will buy into the fact that it takes some time to adjust to a new coach and a new system. But in 1 year, they were better. When you went from Kevin Cosgrove back to Bo Pelini
they were better.
In 2008, they were better. They still got smoked in a few games. But across the board, on the whole, it was better. When they went from Pelini then to Mark Banker, I'm not saying it was better, but it wasn't this freaking bad. And now you're seeing it's catastrophic failure. I get it. You got to be able to have some time to institute a system. But if Diaco is that good, if he's good enough to ultimately have success on defense, are they going to be this bad in year one? I mean, every other year one for a defensive coordinator that I just rattled off, nowhere has it been remotely this bad.
But I guess my question before we get further into this is, how is this team going to play this week as it takes on Iowa? We're going to lot more to Iowa because I know a lot about the Hawks, watch them every week. But is this going to be a team that lays down, or is it going to be a team that plays hard?
I think you're going to see exactly what you've seen over the last few weeks. I think you're going to see a team that's struggling with an identity. And when I say that, I mean in terms of how they're going to play. Are they going to be fired up? How are they going to come out? Are they going to take a punch to the face and fall over like they've done in a lot of these other games and just not be able to adequately answer? Or are they going to come out like they did in the second half against Penn State, which, you know what, they showed a little fire. I'll give you that. It doesn't change the fact that there was no way they were going to beat Penn State. When Penn State wanted to score, they could score. When Penn State wanted to kind of, okay, we're shutting it down, we're going to put the backups in. I get it. Nebraska scored three touchdowns in the fourth quarter against all reserves.
The Husker Doc Talk podcast is presented each week by the Remington Trophy. This season's presentation is January 13th, 2018 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. Hey, Marriott is offering a special rate of $95 a night. You can check in on the 12th, check out on the 14th. The last day to get this deal is December 28th. The Remington Trophy presentation benefits the Boomer Esiason Foundation, and the award is given annually to the nation's top center. Just announced this year's Ford's Legends Award winner, Joe Montgomery from William & Mary. The coach who recruited him, Lou Holtz. So Lou, he played for 2 years with Lou Holtz before Holtz left, but he graduated from William & Mary in 1974. Montgomery, a member of the William & Mary All-Century team. He's been didn't have a great pro career, but he's been a business success. And sometimes those guys give the great speeches because it shows you how football molded them in life to become successful outside of football. I'm looking forward, actually, to hear
that's
that
going to be interesting to see. I was going to say, I didn't know very much about him until you told me about him. And it's one of those things where this is the kind of guy where what he's going to say is going to have some applicability to, quote-unquote, the rest of us.
Time now for the Remington Trophy Watchlist Spotlight. Eric Wren from Oklahoma, the former walk-on, has started every game at center for the Sooners this season. Wren is 6'1", 306 pounds. He started 10 games at center last year for the Sooners and just got a scholarship in the middle of last season.
He did. First JUCO guy we've got done. This was a JUCO guy coming out of Mesquite, Texas.
I did not know the JUCO part of it.
He is. He actually spent, I think it was only 1 year, but he spent one season at a JUCO prior to getting, it was kind of one of those like preferred walk-on kind of things at Oklahoma. But JUCO guy, kind of got an impressive background. I mean, this was a pull up by the bootstraps kind of guy. Hey, by the way, speaking of the Remington spotlight, when are we going to do Kirk Barron?
We can do him next week. Because we probably have...
Now, do you know who Kirk Barron
no,
is?
No, tell me.
That's Purdue Center, Travis.
Oh. Well, we'll be talking about Purdue a little bit later on.
Sorry, had to get that.
Do you just have to take the knife out of my back right now? Is that what you're doing?
Oh, it's going to go all night long. Which I never got to answer the first question you asked me, which was what Nebraska team shows up. And quite frankly, I was going to ask, you know what? I think it's going to depend more on which freaking Iowa team shows up.
Of course, more on the Hawks a little bit later on in this podcast.
That means that we are drinking a beer. Drink a beer, everybody.
The Infusion Brewing Company is the official beer provider of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. This week, we are diving into the Kung Fu Mustache IPA. Tonight's brew is actually a collaboration. The beer jumps out of the glass with fragrant notes of Cascade, Centennial, and Citra hops. Oh, boy, does it. Floral and pine aroma. Give it to a resiny, malty flavors that are staples in many of American IPAs. This is 7% alcohol by volume, an IBU of 101. And Rob and I when I heard the 101, Rob, I was a little worried because I'm not a huge hoppy guy, but the citrus tones in here really kind of settle it down.
I thought when you told me 101, I thought that this was going to be like so bitter, it's going to be like drinking freaking cough syrup.
It's not.
Oh, it is so good. This is going to be 2 weeks in a row of me not remembering the second half of the podcast.
I don't know. Last week's beer was about 11% alcohol by volume. This is 7%, so we've dropped it off a little bit.
This is a pretty damn drinkable beer, though. From an IPA standpoint, this is a nice beer. And you know, as hoppy as it is, I'm assuming it's the Citra hops. I mean, it is.
Oh yeah, it's very much so.
Yeah, I. It's almost like it's got almost like a grapefruit undertone, and there's not. I mean, it's not sweet at all. But it definitely has that kind of like that citrus aroma. But it's a great beer. I like it. This is a couple weeks in a row of me being pretty fired up about the beer.
Infusion Brewing Company with two locations in the Omaha area, the original in downtown Benson, and the brewery and tap room in southwest Omaha. For information, go to infusionbrewing.com. And when you go to have a beer at Infusion Brewing, make sure to tell them you heard about them on the Husker Doc Talk podcast. It's Thanksgiving week, and we all have a lot to be thankful for. On Black Friday, the Huskers and Hawks don't start until 3 o'clock. So what do you do first? Well, Husker fans, you go to Husker Hounds to get all your holiday shopping done. Scotty has everything you need to get all your stocking stuffing complete. Husker Hounds, three locations in Omaha area and at huskerhounds.com. We want to send our thoughts out to Chad at Ticket Express. He's been open about this on Facebook, so I'm going to go ahead and mention it here. His mom had cancer surgery. It appears to have gone really well. Chad, I just want you to know we're thinking about you, buddy. We know that a lot of Husker fans are thinking about you. You've been there for them for the last 25 years, making sure they get in games. And I'm telling you right now, people are sending positive vibes your way and your mom. So I hope everything's going well. And, of course, for 25 years, Ticket Express has been your source to get you in the door when there was a sign on it that said sold out. Husker football, Husker basketball, Husker volleyball, you name it, Ticket Express can get you in. For event and ticket information, go to TicketExpress.com. All right, this used to be the Oklahoma-Nebraska game, then it turned into the Nebraska-Colorado game. Now it's the Heroes game, Iowa and Nebraska. Rob, it's no secret to anyone, I'm an Iowa fan. I've never hid that fact.
What?
Yes.
Crazy
you know
talk.
It. Of course, I host the Hawkeyes postgame show on WHO Radio.
Bet that was fun.
It depends on what week it is, because 2 weeks ago when Iowa beat Ohio State, I was on Cloud 9. Fans were on Cloud 9. If you watch that game, they were better than any team in the country that day. There would have been nobody in the country that beat Iowa that day.
I'd give you that. I'll give you that.
But then losing to Wisconsin, I get. You go up to Madison, but you only have 66 yards of total offense. It's kind of a head-scratcher. But then losing on senior day to Purdue.
Nebraska beat Purdue.
I know. I don't get it. Offensively, the Hawks, not good right now. I think rank 118th nationally.
In total offense.
And it's just, it's baffling to me. And you've watched a lot of Iowa because you and I exchange text a lot during the games. They don't go to their tight ends enough. I know that sounds weird. But why would you go to your tight ends? You have two NFL tight ends.
Brian Ferentz, genius.
you know what's funny is at Nebraska, the head coach takes the beating. At Iowa, it's always been the offensive coordinator.
It's been the coordinators there. The defensive D coordinators getting raked across
Phil Parker
the doesn't
take a beating because they thrive on that don't bend or bend but don't break.
Yeah.
But getting beat
they
at home,
a lot this
but getting
past
beat
weekend.
At home by Purdue, this is why I wonder.
I don't get. Well, you know what? I do kind of get it because, you know, you and I had a conversation about if you look at the talent level that Iowa has, they really do. They've got a lot of talent. But the key thing is, and this is something you pointed out to me that you said was really worrying you early in the season. They're young.
They are very
young. This is a very young team, and those are the teams that have that inconsistency. They've got the talent. I mean, what you saw against Ohio State, I think Ohio State had a little bit of a letdown. If you remember, that was the week after the Ohio State the Ohio State Penn State game. And after that game, that was like a Muhammad Ali George Foreman fight. I mean, that was just a brutal, brutal football game between two powerhouses. And I think those two teams just completely physically, mentally, and emotionally drained each other. And it did not surprise me in the least that the next week Ohio State lost to Iowa and Penn State lost to Michigan State.
But not
State.
As bad. I mean, that was a blowout. I mean, that was a butt kick.
It was, and that was a little bit of a snowball game. But I think Iowa has some they've definitely got some talent. Now, are they better than Ohio State? They play Ohio State 10 times. Ohio State wins 8.
Maybe 9.
But I think a lot of it's just due to the fact this what you see with Iowa. Are they better than Purdue? Yeah, they are definitely better than Purdue.
But they didn't show it.
They are just an inconsistent team, and I think a lot of it has to do with the amount of youth they have. I think this is a team that two years from now, could do some real damage in the West.
Talk to me about, because when I watch Iowa, and I've seen every game, I host the post-game call-in show for the Hawks, what drives me nuts is there's no tempo. And when you don't have tempo, you don't have any identity. And they just can't seem to find really what they want to be. What I mean by like that is they'll get a couple plays moving, but they don't get to the line of scrimmage. They just kind of go back in their huddle, take their time, call the play. I'm not saying you don't have to run a fast tempo.
No, but and that's something that's going to have to go back to Kirk and his son, that they're going to have to figure out if that's something that if they want to do. Again, you need some guys with a little bit of experience, and you need some guys with a little bit of kind of that upperclassman composure to be able to do that. I don't know if they've got that quite yet. I think they could do it. You know, part of it is, too, and this is sort of a half-assed excuse, they do have a lot of weapons. They've got some guys. You look at Wadley, you look at Fant, they've got some wide receivers that are at least reasonably talented. I think they almost have trouble when you talk about that identity. There's been years where Iowa's just said, you know what, screw it. We're just going to pound the rock. We're going to run the ball. And sooner or later, you're going to break. They don't have that because I think there's a little bit of sort of a coaching indecision of, well, crap, if we do that, we're not getting the ball to Noah Fant. And it kind of changes how you do things a little bit. I think if they get a little bit older, I think if they get a little bit more composure, I think they can be a team that has better tempo.
It'd be interesting, and I always remember Coach Osborne preaching this when I'd go to Tuesday news conferences, first in the N Club Lounge and then other places. But he always preached about special teams and how important they were. Now, when people think special teams, they think, you know, kickoffs or field goals. But Iowa's punt return right now is horrible. Matt Vandenberg can't, for some reason, field a punt or return a punt. And that's really had an effect on field position the last couple of Iowa games. So Nebraska doesn't really, at this point, have to worry about a kick return game. If I'm Nebraska attacking Iowa right now, don't go at Josh Jackson. He's the best defensive back in the country. He leads the country in interceptions. You want to get in a one-on-one situation.
Ohio State tried that. It didn't work too well.
And you want to go at Manny Rugumba because Purdue picked on him a lot, and it worked. You don't want to run at a guy like Josie Jewell. Josie Jewell's a great linebacker.
I don't think the running game is going to be the greatest. I don't think our running game is going to be something that's going to have ton of success against him. But I think we can pass on him.
Yeah, but don't go at Jackson.
You go away from Jackson the whole time. Yeah. But I think Nebraska's between Spielman and Morgan, I think they've got a couple of guys that are very, very capable. And even Nebraska's tight ends, I mean, Hoppus isn't a bad tight end. They've got some guys who can catch the ball. They've got some guys who can do some damage. They've just got to be smart in how they do it. One of Riley's problems, though, and this is something I worry about constantly, is that he's not a good in-game coach. I could see Riley being a great preparation coach. He's one of those guys. He will get you ready. And for that first five plays of the game, the first opening series against Minnesota, he's one of those guys where he and Langsdorf can prepare you like nobody's business. You know what? Once things start going, once changes happen, you start having to deviate on occasion from that game plan. That's when these guys don't have the capability to make adjustments in-game, and I do worry about that with Nebraska against Iowa.
And I'm going to put my Hawkeye hat on here because Kirk Ferentz is a pretty good game planner, and he's a pretty good in-game adjuster. And usually, coming off a bad game like they did against Purdue, they usually bounce back and play pretty decent. I'll use Penn State last year where they bounced back and beat Michigan the very next week.
I fully expect Iowa to – I don't expect – I mean, all joking aside, I don't expect Iowa to show up and be the Iowa that we saw against Purdue.
I actually think it's going to be a good game. I don't think it's going to be a blowout either way. I think it's going to be a good game to watch on a Friday, and I think it could be pretty physical because I think Nebraska's going to be I don't think Nebraska's going to lay down. I think they know what's on the horizon for Mike Riley. I don't think they lay down for him. I could be wrong.
I don't think they do, but I think they lack – there's a lot of deficiencies in this coaching staff when it comes to figuring out, A, how to make adjustments during the course of the game, As players, from a psychological standpoint, I don't think these guys have been taught very well in terms of how to absorb a punch to the face and be able to come back. On defense, I'm still scratching my head in terms of what is Diaco teaching these guys. The tackling's horrible. The fundamentals are horrible. You would think, okay, we're late in the season. I get it. It's a new system. You should have at least a bare bones fundamental understanding of what you're supposed to be doing, and we're still not seeing even that.
I was going to say, that's like saying a freshman who starts at week one is still a freshman by week 12. That's not the case. You're not a freshman anymore.
Agree.
And that's why new system doesn't cut it anymore. You've had spring ball, fall camp, all these games. It's not a new system either. You either get it or you don't.
And Diaco, I can buy the fact that, okay, maybe he's got this outstanding system. He knows how to move all the pieces around. I get it. But he doesn't know how to teach that to the players. If his system is great, fine, I get it. I'll let you have an excellent system. But then he and his coaches aren't translating that in a way that the players can understand and execute.
Of course, a lot of us think that Mike Riley is going to be fired either Friday after the game or Saturday morning.
3 weeks ago.
And then the rumors, you know, I texted you, I think, on what, Wednesday, and said, Scott Frost, done deal, 7 years, $35 million.
I'm hearing that from everybody.
Was I the first one to tell you?
Yeah, you were the first person I heard it from.
So, you know, you had Husker fans show up in Orlando over the weekend.
And some of the details that you told me, because a couple of the things you said it was a counteroffer to Florida. I hope to God it's a done deal. I'm hearing it from multiple sources.
Well, and people need to understand, is it a done? It's a verbal deal. There's nothing been signed yet. Because if you did, that would be a public freedom of public information
State act. University.
Yeah, so there's nothing been signed yet. You know, Scott came out yesterday and said there's nothing to the rumors. Nothing's been decided yet, I think was the, I'm paraphrasing the quote, which is saying, hey, I'm not saying I'm not going, but, and that's not fair to him. Let's all be, you know, when Husker fans showed up in Orlando yesterday, and I know it's cute and people love it, how they said, Scott, come home. But you know what? He's got an undefeated team. He's trying to do something at UCF that hasn't been done. I don't think that's fair to him and his players. I know I'm probably sounding all sentimental here, but let the guy finish what
he started. Screw UCF.
But you know he's not going to say, I'm going to Nebraska, at least until like, the American Conference Championship.
And I totally get that. And I'll give him that. I mean, that's, what, a week after the Iowa game?
Yeah.
So I'll give him that. And if I was Scott, I wouldn't say anything either, and I'd be dodging this like gangbusters if I was him.
Because it's not fair to his players.
I'm kind of pausing here because technically nothing's in writing. Everything we've got, I mean, all the information we've got technically is second or third hand info by the time it comes to us.
I don't know if anybody follows the website footballscoop.com, but it's pretty good. And Florida is already laying the groundwork of why it didn't get Scott Frost.
Really? I asked that question because I have not read
so,
that.
So what's going on now, it's funny how you see, you know, I've been doing this a long time, right? I mean, I've been in the media, or at least covering stuff for over 25 years now. And you kind of see what goes on. So I
want to know what they're saying.
Well, I'm going to get to that. So I told you Wednesday night, 7 years, $35 million.
Yes.
Counteroffer to what Florida had offered. So Florida now, there's a story on Football Scooper, it's 24/7 Sports, that is saying Florida is interested in Scott Frost, but not convinced that he can hire the assistants to compete at the SEC level or recruit at the SEC level.
That's a total. We tried and didn't get them right there.
Yeah, so people are going to read this. Exactly. So that's how it works. So if you're wondering, well, Florida's still in the game. Florida's not in the game anymore. I'm convinced that Florida's out of the game. And what Florida's doing is saying, we're interested in Scott, but we're not convinced.
Got reservations.
Yes. And what that does is lay the groundwork to say that Scott Frost can't compete or recruit in the SEC, which... You know what?
I'd be curious to see how Florida would match up against UCF right now.
Oh, UCF would kill them. I think UCF might be the best team in the state. Miami's pretty darn good, but I'd like to see
that
UCF
they are.
Play Miami.
But you know, considering how inconsistent Virginia had them on the ropes until literally mid fourth quarter.
You know, all I could think was Mark Richt, and I like Mark. Is it sad that I like Miami because I like Mark Richt?
Actually, I've always been a big Mark Richt fan, and
I
thought he got the shaft at Georgia. It's not, although it's not like Georgia's doing all that bad with Kirby Smart now.
No, but it was one of those things where, you know, it gets stale, it gets dry. It's like he took that program as high as it was going to go under him.
That was Georgia's John Cooper to Jim Tressel move right there.
But I like Mark Richt so much, and Husker fan, and he's a huge Husker fan. Remember, he was born in Omaha.
He still has family in the area.
And he actually keeps up to date on the Huskers.
But he's always seemed like a stand-up guy and a very respectable coach.
So you got the Scott Frost rumors, which I don't think are rumors. It's going to happen. You just got to be patient. I don't think there is a plan B. If all of a sudden Scott said, you know what, I can't leave these guys, I don't think there's a plan B right now. I don't. Do you think there's a plan B?
I'm sure there's a short list, but I mean, you say that and I'm having like these horrible thoughts. I'm thinking back to when Steve Peterson wanted to get Dave Wannstedt, and then the Miami Dolphins extended his contract completely unexpectedly, and the next thing you know, Nebraska had to go into scramble mode and ended up with Bill Callahan.
So that's about as far as deep we're going to go in with Scott Frost. All you have to do is watch UCF. You'll get a pretty good idea of the type of offense he runs. I think it'll be good for the Big Ten. I think it can be successful in the Big Ten. I mentioned Plan B. There was a story out there of Scott Frost doesn't come to Nebraska. They want a triple option guy. They would go to either Navy. They would go to Army. Nebraska fan wouldn't be happy with a Navy coach coming here. They just wouldn't.
It would be interesting to see what I can't pronounce it. Niumatalolo.
Yeah, I can't.
I can't pronounce his name to save my life. I love the guy, and I love if you ever watch Navy football, it's fun to watch. Which Navy's had, because what Paul Johnson was there a few years
and he's
back
at Georgia Tech
prior to going to Georgia Tech. They've been really up and down at Georgia Tech. Didn't they go up against Iowa in the Orange Bowl here a few years ago?
Yeah.
It was about 4 or 5 years ago. It was a BCS bowl game. That's all I remember. But I think Paul does a great job with the triple option. They've had zero defense there, though, since Paul Johnson hit the door at Georgia Tech. Who did Georgia Tech lose to this weekend? It was a complete nobody. It was kind of embarrassing, quite frankly. That being said, I think what – I'm going to call him Ken because his first name's Ken. Coach Ken at Navy has done an insane job there, and it's some of the best football that Navy's played in decades. I mean, he's got them playing very, very good football, and Naval Academy absolutely loves him. I think it'd be hard for us to get him, actually. But if we could get him, I actually would be okay with him.
You'd be okay with that?
I would actually be okay with him as I sit here and think about it.
I mean, if you can go to Navy and win consistently.
The guy's at Navy, and he's winning consistently. That is not easy to do. I mean, the only other coach at a service academy in the last 50 years who's had that kind of success was Fisher DeBerry at Air Force. And he ran a triple option. He ran a wishbone.
Georgia Tech lost to Duke 43-20.
Duke, that's what it was. Thank you. Duke is not having as good a year as they've had in the past.
But Duke's never really – I mean, still, what he's done down there at Duke is much better than Duke had before he got there.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
So you brought up earlier in the podcast, and I wanted to save it, but you mentioned
– Iowa losing to Purdue.
No, you mentioned the players – saying that, listen, the talent's there, the coaching staff is there. Now,
the continuity.
I'm going to throw that continuity out here. Mike Riley stays at Nebraska. Listen to me, hear me out. Mike Riley's no longer the football coach. But Bill Moose says, you know what? We know you're a good guy. We know you have something to offer. We think people in Nebraska generally like you. I want you to stay on.
Built like that. Super filtrated house for his wife's allergies in Lincoln. I bet they don't want to move.
I want you to stay here in Lincoln. Work with me and help build this athletic department and maintain that continuity between your players and the new coach and help him make that transition. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Mike Riley stays at Nebraska in some capacity.
I don't think that's all that far-fetched. I mean, one, you got to pay the guy anyway.
Yes.
Might as well give him a job. He could slap a red vest on him, make him the – he'd be like the Walmart greeter for the West Stadium. Visitors come in.
So you don't
it's
think
like, would you like an ice cream
you
cone?
You don't think
and
I'm that far
PB&J
off
with
thinking
a crust that. Cut off? No, I don't. I think it would maybe lend a little bit of stability to the recruiting transition.
Because if Scott Frost says, listen.
Yeah, you could leave him here as like a recruiting consultant.
If Scott,
you should
right.
refill that beer glass, Travis.
You are going to be paying Mike Riley regardless. Now, obviously he was hired to be the head coach. I don't know if anywhere in the contract it says he can be reassigned to different position within the athletic department, if he'd want that. But the guy's probably not going to coach again, at least at a high Division I major football program.
I agree.
So
I could see him doing like the Bill Curry route and going to like a Georgia State or someplace to start a program.
Nebraskans generally like the guy personally.
I think most people really do like. I'm yet to meet anybody. Yeah, there's a few former players who wouldn't mind kicking him to the curb. But even that, I think it's just one of those they hate seeing where the program's at right now. I don't think anybody really dislikes the guy. I think most everybody looks at him and goes, okay, this is really a great person. He's just at best a 500 coach.
But don't you think he's the type of guy that you bring him to booster functions, you bring him in, people like to sit down with him, tell stories, because he can talk about, you know, Oregon State, you talk about the National Football League, you talk about Bear Bryant. I mean, people like that stuff.
He's an old school Alabama guy.
Yeah.
He could tell you some stories. I think he actually would do a really good job in that regard.
So just as you're listening to this, I know you're probably thinking I'm crazy, but don't throw out the possibility that if Scott Frost says, yeah, I'll become the head coach, but I'm not coming until after the bowl game. And if he wins out, that's a January 1 bowl game. That Mike Riley stays on at least for a year.
Maintains a little of that recruiting continuity.
Or 2 years to help within the transition and be an ambassador for the university. I know it's far-fetched. I know it's crazy.
I still like West Stadium greeter.
There you go. West Stadium greeter. He can go from sweet to sweet.
He could.
I know it's far-fetched. I know...
I don't think it's far-fetched at all. Actually, all right. I think it's. I don't think it's far off from what we might see happening. And the reason I say that is because I do think people are tired of paying fired coaches and fired ADs. I think keep them on. Make the guy work a little bit.
Obviously, he would have to agree with that, and that would be something that Bill Moose would want him to do. Time now for listener email, one of our favorite portions of this Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. Andy in Kansas City, can we get all the fans to wear white to the Iowa game to promote a frost out? Thanks for the great show.
No, it's the surrender color. No.
There you go.
But I like the... I like the sort of like play on color, temperature, Scott Frost thing there with the frost out. But no, we're not putting up surrender colors.
If you have, if you go back to the years of listening to this podcast, 1.4 million listens almost already. Dave writes, you'll know that Rob doesn't like the all whites, doesn't like white at all. The only reason he had to wear a white jersey is because that was the road jersey.
Red pants, still had a red. I didn't even like the frickin' blackout for the Wisconsin game this year. What the hell? Who are we, Texas Tech?
Dave writes in, when can Frost legally sign a contract with Nebraska? I hope the 2000s could be like the 90s. I'm going to be getting the old, I'm going to be getting too old to climb up a pole on 72nd and Dodge. Hold on, see? Now,
well,
hold on.
Legally, I think anytime he wants.
Yes, he can, but... What you do is open yourself to Freedom of Information Act, and then it would be out there in the open, right?
And that's why we are a state university and subject to that.
7 years, $35 million. That's all that really you
which
need to know.
Which here's a good story. So I know a handful of I shouldn't say a handful. I know a couple of the university regents. Now, I did not go to any of them and ask, hey, what's going on? What are you hearing? I've got a buddy. Actually, it's one of my work partners. He's got a good friend who's one of the university regents. It's not a guy that that I know on a personal level at all. Although it's interesting because he's actually my regent. from an election standpoint, it's the guy I vote for.
Hal Dobb?
I think it's Howard Hawks.
Okay.
Yeah, so anyway, a lot of these guys, so talking to some of these people I know who know the regents on a personal level, the quote that I got from them was, they all went radio silence about 2.5-3 weeks ago. Like, all of these guys just quit. Nothing official's gone out, email, phone calls, whatever, because they don't want people knowing this stuff. You cannot get this information from an official standpoint, and it's a smart move, I think, on their part. If they don't want to upset the boat, if they don't want this information out there, it doesn't go out there. But, I mean, when you talk about the Freedom of Information Act, it is true, and it does apply to Nebraska as a state university. You're not going to see anything official until Scott puts pen to paper. And I agree with what you said. You're not going to see it happen until after the conference championship game for Central Florida.
If you want to know how dangerous the Freedom of Information Act can be, if you want to view it as dangerous, ask Hugh Freeze how dangerous the Freedom of Information Act can be. Jason wants to know, why doesn't Bradley get more snaps on offense? Seems to have more speed than Wilbon or Ozigbo.
He actually has had a couple of niggling injuries, and I think that's been part of it. The other thing is I think this coaching staff has a serious comfort/trust issue with certain guys. And I think they've got some hard and fast rules in terms of certain parameters that guys got to meet in terms of being able to play. You look at, like, Wilbon versus Ozigbo, and I think for the most part, Ozigbo's the guy who's been the most productive back over the last two and a half seasons. And he's also one of the guys that frustratingly has probably played far less than we would like to see him play. I think he's a guy who's a little bit harder to bring down, has a little bit more power, has a little bit of a tougher running style. And given the lack of productivity on Nebraska's offensive line, you need a guy who can break that first one or two tackles to be able to get a few yards. And that's Ozigbo. Why hasn't he played more than Wilbon? Early in the season, you didn't see him for, what was it, like 3.5 games? God, we were scratching our heads over that. I think it's the same situation. I think you've got a young player. He's a true freshman. And I just don't know if he has truly earned their trust yet. From a capability standpoint, yeah, I think he is. He does have a little bit better quickness. I think he's got a little bit better overall speed. I don't know if he has the ability to break that first tackle as well as Ozigbo has. And that coupled with the fact that I know he's been battling a couple of niggling injuries as well, I think that's something that's probably kept him off the field more than we as fans would like to see.
Alex in Little Rock, Arkansas says, I found myself in a suite for the Wisconsin game. What of you? I'll never demand coordinators on the sidelines again. Before I keep on with this question, you're right. You know, when I was at Channel 3 and even Fox 42 for, you know, all those years, I loved being in the press box up above and not on the sideline because you could see everything develop. Yeah, you want to see it develop. As things got out of hand, I heard several folks saying, we did this. Are they on to something? How much blame, if any, do fans share for the current state of affairs? It's popular to put everything on Perlman and Peterson, but they did not operate in a vacuum. Would such rash behavior been possible absent the sky is falling mentality that prevailed after 7-7? No, the fans didn't cause this.
It's a two-edged sword. I mean, last podcast we talked about what are the pros and cons of this program. And, I mean, pro and con is the fan intensity. Which, I mean, there's places way more intense than us. I hate to say that, but it's true. But when you have a fan base that cares this much and is this vehement about their team, A, that's a good thing because you demand excellence. It's also a bad thing. It's, you know, you do create this to a degree. I do put this a little bit on the fans. If this was Iowa or Iowa State where, you know, you have a couple of 7 or 8 win seasons, as long as you throw a 9 or 10 win season in there once in a while, and once every decade you punch out a 11 or 12 win season, they're happy as a clam.
Well,
but that's not Nebraska. We want 9 or 10 as the bare bones baseline, and God damn it, you better win some championships.
You bring up a good point, because one thing that drives me nuts about Iowa is that Gary Barta, the athletic director, in the latest contract extension for Kirk Ferentz, his benchmark is 7 wins. 7 wins, he gets a 100% buyout. 6 wins, then it goes down. But if he hits 7 wins a year, 8 wins, he gets a bonus. Now think about that for a little bit. And I don't think, and Iowa fans aren't happy about that, because he's extended now through, you know, 2023 or 2024 or something like that. And it really makes Iowa fan mad, because Iowa didn't get anything in return on that.
Do you think it's the fact that you're upset about that, or Iowa fans are upset about that, because A, they want another coach, or B, they don't feel like there's enough pressure on Ferentz?
They don't think there's enough pressure. And you know what Iowa fan got a taste of, Rob? They got a taste of being somebody. And what I mean by that, when they went 12-0, they almost beat Michigan. If they would have beat Michigan State.
They didn't go 12-0. They went 12-2.
Well, hold on. When they went 12-0 in the regular season, got 12-2. 12-0 in the regular season. Got
those
the Big
two
Ten.
Losses were ugly.
They were no,
not
the,
that we're one
no,
to
no,
talk.
No, the Big Ten championship game
that
was ugly.
Yeah, you're right. That was a close one.
That was a close
Michigan
game.
State. Who won that game?
Michigan State.
Nice.
But they got a taste of what it was like to play with the elite, be in that elite conversation.
The thing is, though,
I
look at Ferentz, though, and he does that like 3 seasons a decade. I mean,
know,
you look at some
right.
of those. You look at some of those BCS bowl games that Iowa went to throughout the first decade of the 2000s, Iowa had some incredibly successful
but the
seasons.
Landscape
I talked
has
about the BCS win over Georgia Tech.
But the landscape
they had
has
a
changed.
Win over LSU in a BCS tie
that
in
was
a
2004.
BCS game. It was a while back, but my point is they've tasted that. But as an Iowa fan, you ought to expect it. Hey, from a recruiting standpoint, from a program standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, you're currently at a state where you've got a guy who's going to do that 2, maybe 3 times every 10 years. Yeah. The rest of the time, you're going to be like a 7-9 team. I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing, and I guess the corollary question would be, oh, shit, I'm starting to slur now.
This would be the Kung Fu mustache from Infusion Brewing Company.
Nice. Anyway, the corollary question I would ask then is, well, do you want to get rid of Kirk Ferentz and bring somebody else in? The guy's had an incredible amount of stability.
Puts out NFL players.
God, they churn out NFL guys left and right. I mean, Iowa is one of the few. They are one of the quietest NFL-generating schools out there. They churn out a ton of NFL players.
Here's the deal. This goes for Nebraska fan. It goes for Iowa fan. It goes for everywhere. Everybody pretty much in the Big Ten, except for Ohio State fan. Wisconsin's the model, baby. Wisconsin is the model. For the last 13 years, I think they've averaged 10 wins a year.
They are. Wisconsin is who Nebraska used to be. You knew you were going to get 9 or 10 wins a year. You knew you were going to. Here's the difference. And I think this is the thing that separates what Bo Pelini does. Because everybody, you know, I get asked all the time about. I shouldn't say I get asked all the time, but I get asked a lot. And I think Nebraska fans comment a lot on, hey, Bo Pelini won 9, almost 10 games a year, and we fired him, and we as fans were pissed at the guy. There was a lot of fans who were unhappy with Bo. Now, say what you want about Perlman getting firing him. Say what you want about Eichhorst firing him. I agree, but there was a lot of fans who were not happy with Bo, and it had nothing to do with his sideline demeanor. You know, screw the sideline demeanor. I played with Charlie McBride. Bob Devaney was still the AD when I hit the door in Lincoln. Don't think I didn't see guys getting their ever-loving asses chewed, tobacco spit flying, guys running till they're puked, till they puked, coaches and athletic directors going on blue word-ridden tirades. I saw all of that stuff, and I got to be honest with you, I was perfectly fine with it. I did not have a problem with that with Pelini. Pelini's ultimate downfall wasn't the fact that he was only winning 9 or 10 games a year. His downfall was the fact that he won 9 or 10 games a year, but there was zero championships in there. Don't give me the whole division championships, the fact that we won the Big 12 North, that we won the Big 10 West. That's not a championship. That's second place.
What, he got to, what, 2 championship games, got blown out in both, right? Or was it 1?
In the Big Ten or yeah. Big Ten plus Big 12?
Well, you're right, because they should have beat Texas.
Yeah, there was a couple of Big 12 title games. There was a couple of Big Ten title games.
But no titles.
It never won any titles. And you go back to the fact that Nebraska hasn't won a conference championship again since 1999. And I think that's the thing that's really painful. Nebraskans want a couple of things as fans, and then there's always going to be this pressure, at least amongst the people. I mean, for any of us who were alive in the 1990s, and everybody talks about, we want to go back to the 1990s. Okay, I get it. It's going to be incredibly difficult to win 3 national titles in 4 years. It's going to be incredibly difficult to basically play for 5 national titles or come close to 5 national titles in a 6-year span. That's going to be tough to do. I get it, but I don't think it's out of the question to have that 9 or 10 win continuity. Bo Pelini was able to have the 9 or 10 win continuity. The next step you take is you got to win an occasional title, and it doesn't have to be every single year. But when you look at Wisconsin, and when you say Wisconsin's the model, Wisconsin has won Big Ten titles. Wisconsin has gone to the Rose Bowl. I mean, heck, Wisconsin loses a coach. Barry Alvarez, the AD, takes over as the bowl game coach and still wins Rose Bowl games. That's what Nebraskans want.
It's funny that you say that, because Steve says this, and I'm just gonna go. I'm not gonna read his whole email because it's very long, but he did his homework. Steve's a smart guy. I know Steve. He's a CEO. He says this: I believe the majority of Husker fans, especially season ticket holders, are rational enough to know that the mid-90s run is comparable to a 100-year flood. If the mid-90s is the expectation, well, the sellout streak would have ended by now. Husker fans want to be relevant. What does relevant look like? Look at the 23 years between 1971 and 1994 national championships. Nebraska won 0 national titles, but went to a bowl game every year, mostly the Orange Sugar and Fiesta. Won a Heisman Trophy in 83. Won a Lombardi in 72, 82, and 83. Won an Outland in 72, 81, 82, 83, 92, and 94.
Actually, that would be Outlands in 81. 82.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, so 81, 80. I skipped 81. Won a Butkus in 93. Won a Conference Coach of the Year in 73, 75, 78, 80, 88, and 92. Won Conference Player of the Year in 72, 76, 80, 81, 82, 83, 88, 92, and 93. Won the conference 72, 75, 78, 81, 82, 83, 84, 88, 91, 92, 93. Played for a national championship in 83 and 93. Should have won national championships in 1980, 1981. Thank you, Penn State, for a phantom sideline. 82, 83, and 84. He brings up good points. And what he's saying is,
phantom sideline was 82.
So, and that's what he said.
I thought you said 81.
No. Well,
I'm nitpicking here. I apologize.
You're nitpicking, but he got it right.
I know Steve, and Steve's right, though.
So he's bringing up a good point. And, in fact, that's what Husker fans want.
And we got to... There was a Twitter question that got put out there about, and I think it actually went to Adam Carriker's Twitter page, where the question that got asked was, what separates Nebraska from a relevant standpoint under Osborne up to Osborne's last 5 years. And it's the point that Steve's making is that, you know, Osborne was relevant. You know, it's not the fact that you average 9 or 10 wins a year. Does Osborne survive the 70s? Does Osborne survive the 1980s? Listen, I get it. I get the fact that he didn't win a national title until the mid-1990s. But he was relevant, and that relevant is the averaging essentially. He averaged just shy of 10 wins a year prior to that last 5 years of his career. I think it was 9.8 wins a year, which basically I'm going to round up and say he averaged 10 wins a year and had a couple of near misses from a national title standpoint in that span as well, was churning out major trophy winners, was playing in major bowl games. I mean, Nebraska was a fixture on New Year's Day. And that's something that has been lacking sorely. And I think when you look at Pelini and his averaging 9 wins, that lack of relevance is due to the fact that even though Pelini was winning 9 wins a year or getting 9 wins a year, you didn't have that relevance on a national level from the standpoint that Nebraska was playing in those major bowl games. They weren't playing for championships other than they were playing in conference title games, but it's different.
And let's be honest, too.
Especially when you don't win them.
When you're playing in the Big 8 compared to the Big 10 or even the Big 12, the landscape changed in college football. But it's still, you can achieve a lot of those things Steve just brought up. Of course, if you have questions, Dr. Rob has the answer. Send them to doctalksports@gmail.com. You can also reach out to Dr. Rob on Twitter, @DocTalkSports. Dave on Twitter says, 64 ounces isn't enough to forget about this season. Well, if you had had...
Is that how much is in a growler?
So the growler from Infusion, by the way, you can
would
buy...
Would you top your glass off? Because if you don't, I'm going to finish that
thing.
Well,
hold on now, because I was going to save a little for my wife, because I think she wanted to try it.
I love your wife. I think she's getting tired of me drinking in her in your basement. I almost said sleeping in your basement, which is probably what I should do tonight.
No, I think last week you were a lot more drunk. Last week was... That was... Loose Morals was the name of that beer, and that was...
And it was so delicious.
It was so, so good.
That was a good beer.
We want to thank Infusion Brewing Company for providing the Kung Fu Mustache tonight. Of course, Infusion Brewing Company, the official beer provider of the Husker Doc Talk podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. So, will the bells be tolling for Mike Riley on Friday after the game or Saturday?
I still say they tolled the Sunday after the Northwestern game.
That's when they started. So you think he's already been told?
Oh, he knows.
But when will fans officially get the word?
I'm going to say Monday.
You're going to hold off till Monday.
Gotta let the guy have his Thanksgiving weekend.
There you go. Wisdom from Dr. Rob Zadiska. I'm Travis Justice. Hope you enjoyed this edition of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. If you're listening on iTunes, please, please, please give us a rating, give us a review, because that helps us get more listeners. If you're on Podbean, give us a like. You can leave a comment as well. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, probably talking about Mike Riley getting fired. We'll talk to you next time on the Husker Doc Talk podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy.